We are Rogue Media Sports.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
It is the Doomsday Podcast. Ed Werder, Matt Mosley from high above AT&T Stadium. We're taping this, another late night. Cowboys only play in prime time. They only play on Thursdays. And Cowboys win this thing 41-35. And Ed, the first five home wins, it was like 20 or more points in every game. It kind of blown everybody out. And so it was almost like we've kind of forgotten what one of these looks like here. And I kind of enjoyed it. I mean, I was a little more dialed in than I normally am in the press box. I kind of moved around just to kind of stay engaged. But this was fun. And I think ultimately this probably could, you know, play into the Cowboys' hands. Although, boy, they yielded a lot of yards tonight. But this did feel much different than everything else we've seen here at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas.
Yeah, for the first time this season when playing at home, the Cowboys didn't lead from start to finish against an inferior opponent. While they scored 40 points for the fifth time this season, you know, they trailed the Seahawks at halftime and were behind late in the fourth quarter until Dak Prescott's game-winning touchdown pass to Jake Ferguson. But a team that had won its first five home games by an average of 29 points a game and never once trailed, the Cowboys won this one by just 6 points. And I thought it was interesting afterward, Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott both spoke about how this was a different experience and one that they think will benefit them going forward. That McCarthy, you know, told the players in the locker room after the game, you know, that's December football right there. That's what's going to happen, you know, in these next few games where they're playing some, you know, high caliber playoff type opponents, starting with the division leading Eagles in their NFL best 10-1 record a week from Sunday night here. But this was a game that required, you know, had some white knuckle moments, certainly had some adversity that the Cowboys had to overcome. Easily could have lost the game. Their defense certainly played poorly enough to do that. I mean, Deron Bland, I guess we'll talk about him in some kind of detail about the kind of performance
gave
he
up
delivered
a ton of yards.
There. Yeah. But, yeah, I think, you know, Dak Prescott said that he wants his teammates to enjoy this sort of mini bye, the weekend off. He's going to be watching that Eagles 49ers game with the expectation that when they report in on Monday, it's all about the Eagles. And as he said, this is when the real season, real football begins.
All right. I don't believe in the mini bye. That's why.
You believe in the mini bar?
Absolutely, but I
wish we had a mini bar here
Sunday night. Kind of do here in this suite, I've discovered. But Sunday night, I'm gonna break in here and do another podcast, all right? And I know you're gonna be out of town, so maybe doing it alone. But no, this is a good night for the Cowboys. 41-35, they were down 28-20, and they showed some metal. I like METTLE, I like that. We're gonna continue down this path. We got a lot to talk about. We got sponsors to talk about. And Stephen, if you would go ahead and play the music, sir. The Doomsday Podcast. Always love that music. Ronnie Foss. We have our own singer-songwriter for Doomsday. And we have our own suite where I always love all the media watches me and they're like, why is Mosley getting off on the silver level? Why is he not coming back up with us? Well, because we have a suite where we do these things. And December football, that's interesting because this was the last day of November, as far as I'm concerned. And I thought, Dak just continues to be in the zone. Ed, I mean, you're the keeper of like all the stuff. But now one note I saw that I kind of liked from you was this, the fact that there were no punts in this game. And like going back over what NFL history, how many games have there been in which there are zero punts?
Well, first of all, this is the highest scoring game in NFL history, a total of 76 points by the two teams. It's the highest scoring game in NFL history without there being a single punt, and only the fifth game, as you said, in NFL history without a punt. And Mike McCarthy has now coached in three of those five games. He had the one tonight and two games with Aaron Rodgers and the Packers in 2014. It's pretty remarkable. He got up there and spoke to, you know, the unique kind of game it was with all the penalties. A lot of those penalties were on third down, so team didn't get off the field. Punter didn't have to come out. That was certainly a factor in it, the high number of penalties in this game. What was the total, 19 penalties in this game? So a lot of them on third down. But that off to the side, McCarthy mentioned, oh, this is not the first one of those games I've been involved with. In fact, I've been involved in two or three of them. So I check with the great people at ESPN Stats and Information, and sure enough, McCarthy was right. He's been in three of these games, three of five. That's amazing.
Yeah.
To your point about Dak, three more touchdown passes tonight. That gives him, what, 21
in his last seven
games. Yeah. He's never had a sustained period of domination like we've seen this year. And it's so far from what Mike McCarthy expected this offense to be when he took over as the play caller. You know, we emphasized pass protection, which was sketchy tonight. They came into the game not having a lot of sack in their last three games, 111 pass attempts, the longest streak in the NFL, longest streak by Dak in his career. And then he gets sacked four times and almost right away got sacked twice by the Seahawks in this game tonight. But overcame all that, had what is six straight game with multiple touchdown passes, matching the longest streak of his career. So Dak Prescott's playing incredibly well. In fact, after the game, McCarthy was asked to assess the level at which Dak is playing. And earlier in the week, you might remember, he equated it with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay when he was winning MVPs. And tonight he said, we want to attack people on offense, and you can only do that if you have a championship caliber quarterback. And Dak is that guy.
Yeah.
And I think more people around the country are beginning to buy into that. Although, obviously, the whole narrative changes if they lose to Philadelphia at home, and that ends their streak and essentially clinches the division for Philadelphia, especially if Dak doesn't play well. But he played well when they lost to Philadelphia, and he's beaten Philadelphia plenty of times in his career, but he definitely needs to beat them next Sunday night.
I think so. And, boy, that feels like a long 10 days. And then after that, it's crazy. We're going to be out here for Philly. Then only one more home game after that. I mean, this is really starting to be this finishing kick to the Cowboys season. And what they'll do Sunday is do what they do, you know, the last couple of Sundays, hope that Philly loses. Philly never loses. They always find a way, don't they? They've got one loss this season. They do play San Francisco. And as some reporter was like, after the game, was like, Jerry, how will you watch the game? And Jerry, you could tell Jerry was like wondering what the question meant. Like, well, I've got a TV like everybody else. I'm going to watch it. So somebody was really wanting to know how Jerry, I thought he was going to a sports bar or something. like a Buffalo Wild Wings.
I think so. Maybe you could see.
Yeah. And
maybe you could take Dion and Shador with them. They were here today.
Did you say hi to Dion at all?
Of course not. I was upstairs in the press box by the time he appeared on the field. Coincidental, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, the last time you saw him, he kind of had a little interaction with you.
He asked me if I believed. And my question now is, do you?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Earlier today, I think SI, we believe.
SI
it was,
now.
Yeah. Is that different than SI?
SI now is not what SI used to be, the gold standard. I mean,
yeah.
This week they were accused of fabricating using AI to create writers. They were not given birth to by any human beings. They were AI generated writers that they came up with pictures and bios for, and then they go out and embarrass themselves by making Deion Sanders the Sportsman of the Year in a year where he won 4 games and lost, what, 8 of his last 9? They're not even bowl eligible.
Yeah.
It's been a rough year of candidates. Who else could have possibly been more deserving?
I kind of like the AI stories.
Yeah.
I thought they did a pretty good job. But that story, I think, was written by somebody we know. So that was the Deion story was real. But Deion was here. Shador, another member of the Deion family, and they were sitting up, I think, in Jerry's box, from what I can tell, having a big time. And Ed, you'll be up there soon, you know, not too far away from the Sanders family. Okay, so maybe it's good for them. Like, okay, I think maybe a close game at home could bode well. That's the way they were spinning it, and that's the way even some of the writers I'm seeing after this game are spinning it. You could also say it doesn't bode very well because they gave up a ton of yards. I think they had the ball for like 24 minutes and they had over 500 yards. A total
play,
offense.
Like almost 8 yards of
yeah,
play.
Yeah. Five
touchdown passes. They'd only given up 6 all year.
And then huge, like on pass interference penalties, right, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there was a ton of stuff going on. And that is concerning that Seattle felt like they could come out and they seemed to pick on Deron Bland. Isn't that interesting? A guy who is the pick six king and has 5 this year. They just went at him time and time again. And at one
point,
November
defensive player of the
month. And some people think he could be like the NFL defensive MVP. And yet, man, they picked on him. And at one point I looked up, Ed, it was like, this was fairly early in the game. It was maybe in the third quarter or something. And he had given up 157 yards on like 6 targets and 5 catches, and I think it admitted it, and then some of it didn't even count. He could have had even more yards, but you know, it was like pass interference penalty that put him down there on the 1 yard line on in Jigba. That guy's a good player, by the way. He's a local lad,
first round draft
from Rockwall, from
Ohio
State.
Pete Carroll made a point of saying he wanted more involved in this game. I mean, no, I think we forget to put. Let's talk about Bland first and then the defense in general. But, yeah, to your point about Bland, I mean, this was really the game that made the Cowboys regret the loss of Trayvon Diggs, I thought. You know, Deron Bland allowed 2 first-half touchdown passes to DK Metcalf. You know, when the game started, Deron Bland had 5 touchdown catches and DK Metcalf had 3. By halftime, they were tied. And by the end of the game, Metcalf had beaten him by a count of 6-5. In terms of touchdowns over the course of the year. So it was that bad a performance. And the Seahawks definitely targeted him. They went after him in the first half. They completed 6 out of 7 passes for 138 yards and the 2 touchdowns when Bland was the nearest defender in coverage in the first half. And the 138 yards was the most he had yielded as the nearest defender in any game in his career, 2-year career. Now he did get one back, to his credit. He got an interception at a point where the Cowboys were desperate to get a stop on defense, and they wound up not being able to score on that series, which would have allowed them to take the lead. So it was a pivotal play that Bland made on what had been a really bad night. But when you look at how – 2 things. This was the 2nd most points Dan Quinn's defense has given up at home since in the 3 seasons he's been here. I think the Raiders scored 36 – on Thanksgiving Day 2 years ago. That's the most. You know, they just, until late in the game, couldn't get off the field and were giving up one big play after another to an offense that really had not performed well. They only had 3 touchdowns in their last 4 games total. Pete Carroll was, you know, all over his offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, trying to come up with ways to create some offense in this game. And for them to think that they could block well enough and get the ball out of Geno Smith's hands quickly enough to negate the pass rush and exploit the secondary, I would not have bet that would happen. But that seems to have been where the Cowboys were exposed in this game.
Yeah, I thought the Ravens played better because of
those jerseys. Those look kind of cool, like the throwback jerseys they had.
The Seahawks, you mean?
What did I say?
The Ravens.
Oh, I had Ravens on the mind because the Ravens are the team they only scored like 3 points against.
Right, right.
Yeah, the Seahawks.
Oh, yeah, those are great throwback.
I mean, those look so cool.
Back in the 70s, the Dave Craig, Steve Largent era, mm-hmm. Cortez Kennedy. That's what they used to wear when they were in the AFC West.
Yeah. Cortez was a little later, wasn't he? But yeah,
I mean, that was defensive player of the year on like a 2-14
team. He was unbelievable. He was unbelievable. Okay, and by the way, I do want to say our title sponsor, presenting sponsor, Marable Homes, Marable, Homes, and in fact, right now there's a tour of homes going on in the Dallas area over in Lake Highlands, and they're on it. I mean, it's like their actual home. Blake and Amy Marable, people are like tramping through their home. I mean, that doesn't sound great, but they're going through and they spend big money to be on this tour of homes, and it's just gorgeous. Their homes, and they build these things, and I mean Lake Highlands, Preston Hollow. I'm sure they would come out to your neighborhood in Flower Mound, Highland Park, Cedar Creek Lake, just a big time. And it's just approachable luxury homes. And they blend into neighborhoods despite being just gorgeous. But I kind of like how they put them in. And it's not so ostentatious that it just kind of buries everything else around it. It's just very, very classy, traditional. I just love it. I love it. And so Marable Homes. And Ed, I think if you decide, I mean, given the fact that you are a highly paid guy, if you decide to finally do another home in Flower Mound, and that would seem odd at your age.
Would Blake come out to Flower Mound?
Blake would come out, and he can get all the materials, and he knows how to do it, and he would build you just a gorgeous. So just give it some thought.
Well, maybe I'll drop in. Maybe we'll go over there on Sunday and watch the game.
Over at the Marables home.
Just drop in
and watch the what time is that, San Francisco?
3:25.
Is that a Fox?
We'll just do the podcast from their house.
Well, I bet they got a great game room. Great kids.
Maybe Jerry will be there because he doesn't know where he's watching the game.
Yeah. They got a son named Burson who's like a huge sports guy, a very talented young family. Anyway, thank you, Marable Homes, for that. Now, Ed, and we need to get to Stretch here in a minute. Yeah. But real quick, I wanted to make a couple of points. And Stretch, we'll talk to Stretch about this as well. But like some weird game management stuff. I kind of want to get your take on this. Okay, down at one point, they could have tried to tie it up at 28-28 with 3 minutes to go in third quarter, and they elect to go ahead and take the extra point and make it 28-27. Were you kind of okay with that?
I was a little surprised.
Okay.
Given how Mike McCarthy tends to be aggressive in these situations that are, you know, closely analyzed by the analytics people, and he's got a whole new staff of analytics people. And maybe after that decision, they'll have another whole new staff next year of analytics people helping make those tough decisions. But yeah, I was a little surprised they didn't try to tie the game in that situation, but I'm not sure it was his most controversial call of the night.
Okay. Do you think the most controversial call of the night was going for it on 4th and 2 at their 30 when they could have gone up 30-28, or throwing the ball and leaving a minute 46 for the Seahawks to come down the field? They had no timeouts. They could have had it down at 1 minute and made them drive the field, and instead they gave them the ball back with a minute 46. And by the way, at a minute 20, they were at midfield. I mean, they had, by the way they'd been racing up and down the field, I thought they had a great chance to win that game.
Well, yeah, I thought the decision to throw to CeeDee Lamb in that situation and try to deliver the knockout blow by scoring, you know, a touchdown in that situation was a little bit odd. When McCarthy was questioned about it, as he'd already left the podium when some of the writers then decided to question him about his strategy there, he kind of laughed it off and said, "I was trying to win the game. I didn't know you guys were a bunch of conservative guys who were afraid to try to win." But yeah, I thought that was a poor decision and probably put his team at risk more than was necessary given how well Seattle was moving the ball and scoring almost at will. But Hey, credit to the defense. On a night they didn't play very well, they got, what, three stops on downs late in the game, including the last two. DeMarcus Lawrence, I think, made three tackles, including a tackle for loss on fourth down on the next to last series. And then Micah Parsons, on a night where the Cowboys did not have a sack of Geno Smith, the first time they didn't have a sack of the quarterback all year long, first one not to sack Geno Smith all year long. You know, Micah was through in a second half and created immediate pressure and effectively ended the game with that pass rush. But so they redeemed themselves a little bit in that regard, but not at all a good night for Dan Quinn and the Cowboys defense. And I think a lot of that was why McCarthy was trying to win the game on offense and taking the risk that he did with having Dak throw a fourth down pass to CeeDee Lamb and stopping the clock.
Yeah.
And third down pass.
Third down, and then
that was another bad analytics decision. Kicking the field goal to go up six was not apparently what you want in that situation. According to the analytics, they should have gone for the touchdown. So
on fourth down,
yeah,
and then make them, if you don't get it, go further.
But then they only have to kick a field goal to tie it.
Yeah, they only have to do that, tie it. I'm fine with that. Fine kicking the field goal. It was the third down thing that bothered me. And then
I thought that was a
lot of people near me were upset when they didn't take the field goal from Aubrey on the 30 that would have put them up. And again, I don't know if they were looking at the analytics or all that. I think the analytics, I was sitting next to somebody who had all that up on their screen, and the analytics did say that – you could go for it there on fourth and two at the 30. So it was
of unconventional decisions we see coming out of these coaches nowadays with their reliance on the analytics. And one of the things that McCarthy really sold NFL owners on when he sat out a year after the Packers fired him and he was trying to come back, one of the things he tried to sell people on was he was a new method coach, that he believed in analytics. So don't think I'm just some, you know, curmudgeonly guy who sits up in the winter in Green Bay and doesn't take calculated risk. Like, I totally buy into analytics, and he really pushed that as a part of what he was going to bring to his next organization. So, like it or not, it helped get Mike McCarthy hired by Jerry Jones.
Yeah, and Jerry's gone along with him and hiring all these folks that they've brought in. I think they just lost somebody, by the way. Somebody just hired one of the Cowboys analytics people away from them. All right, Ed, we're gonna turn it over right now to, everybody always wonders, they thought he was going to give an F for the secondary, especially Deron Bland, the way he played. Although what's funny is he could have ended up giving up a ton of yards and had two interceptions. You know, he had another one that he got his hands on, and
also that play where Tyler Lockett in the fourth quarter had a ball thrown to him in the middle of the field that was on the mark, but he was not quite expecting it yet, and he didn't handle it. He might have scored on that. It might have been another 60-yard touchdown play that Bland gave up. So, yeah, not his best work. It'll be interesting to see how he responds to this. He really hasn't had this level of adversity in terms of failing on the field in the time he's been here in 2 years, starting at slot corner and now as a outside corner since Diggs was injured. It'll be interesting to see how they coach him and how well he responds to that, and whether the Eagles come in here with, you know, Devontae Smith and AJ Brown and try to do the same thing.
Yeah, they will try that. I talked to Stephon Gilmore after the game, and I mean, he was really trying to help Deron through that. But I think Stephon, from what I could tell, kind of enjoyed the challenge when they kind of called on him to travel with DK Metcalf, and I asked him, I'm like, what do you have to do against him? Like, what were you, you know, what were you trying to do? And he was like, press coverage. He's like, you've got to throw him off. You've got to try to hit him, you know, and get him off his route. He got up to, did you see like the speed? Did you happen to see that?
Fastest, 22. Fastest speed beat Tyreek Hill.
Uh huh.
And
that
his
73
size,
yard touchdown.
And at his size, that's ridiculous. He's, you know, 6'3" and 240 or something like that. And to outrun Tyreek Hill, that's absurd. That's the kind of freak they were trying to deal with. And, you know, Gilmore, you're right, they did switch him off, and Gilmore gave up a touchdown to him, too, on a slant across the back of the end zone when he kind of bumped into Jayron Kearse. The third touchdown pass.
He was mad at Jayron on that because he got like picked. He got picked by Jayron. That's what it looked like. And he got called for a hold or a.
Well, don't make excuses for the guy just because you talked to him one on one in the locker room.
Come on, you make excuses for Brandon Cooks that you talk to him after every game now.
What
you
excuses guys, are there to make for Brandon Cooks?
You guys are very close.
But what is it that? He's got three touchdowns in four games.
I didn't like some of the routes he ran tonight. All right, it is time for Glenn Stretch Smith Stretch Plays.
All right, it is time for something we call Stretch Plays. And it is Glenn Stretch Smith, former Cowboy scout and coach. And Stretch and I had the pleasure of spending part of this game together in the press box. It's not always the case, but that's what we had tonight. And I think Stretch, I think you really, I mean, I think we both enjoyed that scenario, maybe me more than you. But we had some fun up there and were able to kind of look at some different things. But, I mean, I think it was good for the Cowboys that they finally got in a close game at home. They've had a lot of blowouts at home. They're able to, even though it got a little scary there at the end, what was it, 41-35, and they left Seattle. So, Stretch, take me through a couple of these scenarios. One was Cowboys down 28-26, but they go ahead and kick the extra point with 3 minutes left in the third quarter to make it 28-27. And then the next scenario was the Cowboys decided to go for it instead of making it a 30-28 lead on a relatively easy field goal for a guy who never misses, Aubrey. And they elected to go for it 4th-and-2 from the Seattle 30 and did not get it. Let's start with those plays and what you kind of thought about some of McCarthy's game management.
Yeah, I mean, I get when I – and, again, you sauntered down there and took Newey's spot up in the press box, and after spending a half of watching the football game with you, I don't know if I need a frontal lobotomy or a bottle in front of me, but, you know, good, Matt, it was good to see you, and I obviously – We'll leave it at that. As far as the time management, and I said it during the game, I said, going forward on that 4th-and-2 in that situation, you got to kick the field goal there. I really felt like at that point, and I'll go back when they had an opportunity to tie the game at 28, and he doesn't go for two. Like that makes no sense to me in that scenario. And so, when he came up and went for it on that 4th-and-2 instead of kicking the field goal, I'm thinking, I mean, here's a guy who it feels like gambles with an American Express credit card. He's just recklessly gambling. And you know, I get it. I get the aggressive mentality, and I understand all that. But then I go to the end of the game, and you've got an opportunity there to peel 40 more seconds off of the clock. And they chose not to do that. They chose to throw the ball. Again, a reckless gamble. Now, I'm going to take you back to the end of the first half on special teams. Seattle gets flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct, so Dallas kicks the ball from midfield with about a minute and, I don't know, 40-something seconds left, and he runs up and kicks it through the uprights. For what? To give him the ball right there at the 25, you're kicking the ball from midfield. Pooch the ball to the 3 or 4 yard line and see if you can get them to kind of pull that thing out. And if you do, then you got an opportunity right there, I think, to make some things happen. This was a defense that was struggling. And when I say struggling, at one time, I think Seattle was 9-for-10 or 9-for-11 on third down conversions. Dallas couldn't get off the field in any critical situations. And so I just feel like that it was a reckless gamble throughout the game and recklessly gambling. And to throw the football down there, I mean, I'll make the blackjack analogy. It's like you got a pair of queens, the dealer's showing 16, you got a win in hand, and then you split queens and you get greedy. And then you get hit in the teeth. I mean, those are the kind of people that I'd almost like to gamble with. I mean, I'd like to get in a good game of Yahtzee with any of those guys. I'd beat their brains in. They're bad gamblers, and they gamble at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And so it's frustrating to watch that.
Well, one of those fade patterns, you know, none of them ever really seem like that great of an idea under the best of circumstances. You're on third down. You got a chance to leave them with a minute and no timeouts, and you spot them an extra 46 seconds. I mean, within 20 seconds, they were at midfield. And then somehow you stop them. Thank goodness for Micah Parsons. They can't get a third and two, and they can't get a fourth and two, and you go home with a win. But that was rough. Let's jump over real quick on the defensive side of the ball and stretch. And I want you to go ahead and come forth with your theory here, because I kind of like it. I like where you're going with this. The Cowboys, you know, what they've had to do in terms of playing Thanksgiving on a short week and then turning around and playing again. Do you think some of that showed up tonight? And, man, the Deron Bland thing, you talk about getting picked on. He got picked on so much, they started letting Stephon Gilmore follow DK Metcalf around because he was victimizing Deron Bland. Now, Deron made a great interception. But what, when you kind of looked at that whole scene, what did it suggest to you?
Well, again, think about the Cowboys coming out of that short week and going in from a Sunday to a Thursday game. You have to have some carryover during that time in your game plan. And then when you play on a short week like that, and then you go Thursday to Thursday, at some point in there, you got to give guys rest. You got to take time off. My gut feeling is what I saw was somewhat of a Cowboys game plan that had kind of been carried over for 2 weeks. That was my upstairs view of what I was seeing. Then when you come into a game, Matt, and you've got DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and Jackson Smith and Jigba, all of a sudden you got matchup problems. You've got matchup problems with where are you going to put Lewis? How are you going to match him up? Gilmore usually plays one side, Bland the other. He made an unbelievable, what I felt like was another really bad gamble on the slant ball and give up the 70-something yard touchdown to DK. I don't like that play at all. I mean, sometimes you have to, you know, sometimes you eat the bear and sometimes the bear eats you, and he won on that slant route, and you've got to be able to make that play. And I'm going to say this. He also gambled right there in the third quarter when he got the pick because they kept running that slot out, or they kept running that motion, and then that short, it was in the short field, and then he was able to run that speed out, and he was able to sit on that and pick it off. That was the one time that he made the pick, but I felt like they were really going at this Cowboy defense, and I also think that it was a game plan that you've just had to keep, kind of recycling because of short weeks and then playing Thursday to Thursday. Where now you got somewhere to point to with a 10-day window to go play Philadelphia. When you look at how the pass rush, it got cranked up a little later in the game, and then I didn't think Bell had a good game. I didn't think Curse had a very good game. I didn't think Hooker had a good game. I thought there were some lazy feet plays, and I'm saying that's why you got the long pass interference calls. I know that you look for me to give a grade, and I think it's fair to give a grade tonight, and the grade is T. T for a tired-ass football team, a tired-ass defense, because that's what I got through watching tonight was a football team that it took till late in the game to get, you know, one or two critical stops, while the first 3.5 quarters – they were out of position a lot, and they looked tired.
Okay, T for tired. I mean, people on Twitter were like, oh, Stretch is going to give them an F. But I feel like T for tired, that may be a new one from Stretch, and the entire defense is given that. Also, Stretch did call out some certain players. I did think Jordan Lewis made a good play late. I got to talk to Stephon Gilmore after the game. Thought he matched up a little bit better with DK and tried to press him. Kind of liked it. Had a good visit with Stephon. I don't know what was going on, but Stephon and I really found a good rapport, much like you know, some of the folks that I visited with in the press box tonight, Stretch. Now, Stretch, over on the offensive side of the ball, there's Dak again, 299, 70% of his passes completed, and three touchdowns. And then he had that one play down there, kind of, boy, you know, he showed the old RPO situation. And then at the backside, there he goes. There he goes over to the boundary. So I thought Dak, for the most part, played pretty well. I think there was one throw you were frustrated with, but that was kind of a free play. What'd you think of Dak and the wide receivers?
I did. I thought he played well. I think it's, you know, I think his game is starting to carry over week after week. You're starting to see some of, again, his ability to press the ball into the seams. I mean, they, you know, Seattle was basically staying in a six-man box and matching up with you from a run game standpoint. I thought the protection was pretty decent tonight. But I think Dak is getting, you can tell, week after week after week, to me, he's getting more comfortable with the offense. He's getting more comfortable. You saw him a time or two look his eyes, look the safety out of the middle of the field, then come back to the other side. To me, those are all things that show a quarterback is comfortable and understanding exactly where to go with the football, exactly where to turn the nose of the football, and how to fit it into those zone areas. You know, receivers-wise, I think the Cowboys have got really good receivers. I'm telling you, I every week I see why they allowed Schultz to get out of here from a free agent standpoint, because, you know, Ferguson, Shoemaker are really good players. And, you know, I saw something tonight out of Jake Ferguson. I mean, he took that shot down there by the goal line on that – it was a tight end screen. And, I mean, he stuck it up in there absolutely like you want to stick it up in there and got the first down. And then he got up and there was a bunch of, you know, face mask to face mask wrapping. He didn't back down a step. And that's what, you know, you like to see that competitiveness. I mean, he is a really good football player, and he really understands the pass game. And to me, those guys are kind of all on the same page with the quarterback, man. I mean, I think you saw some really good things. Now, you know, Turpin dropped a few balls that I wish he would have hung on to. They had Deuce was inactive, so they felt like they were getting the right matchup they were looking for in doing some of those receiver screens and some of that bubble stuff. They just didn't seem to have the success that they wanted to. But overall, offensively, I mean, another winning performance and a good job by the offense. And I think a good job by the offensive line. It's not going to show from a running standpoint, but it is going to show from a protection standpoint. And I like how Dak continues to look and be more comfortable week in and week out in this offense.
All right. O-line, they did have a bad, you know, they negated a touchdown with a couple of things they did. Had an illegal man downfield, ineligible receiver that was called. I believe that was Tyler Smith that was called upon. Way too many penalties, both these teams combined, for something like 20 penalties. 800 yards of total offense tonight. No punts, no punting. I got no problem with that. Like to see the high flying offense. And CD Lamb with finishes the night, 12 catches, 116 yards, and a touchdown. Stretch, that was fun. That was fun doing that this evening. I was going to give you one defensive stat. Interestingly, who do you think came close to leading this team in tackles? Yes, sir, that's right. Deron Bland led the team in tackles with five solo tackles. Most of them, I think, down. Yeah.
Yeah, he needed to tackle well because, quite frankly, I mean, he didn't have his best night covering, but hey, man, we're entitled to bad games and we're entitled to taking bad angles at times. And, you know, I'm sure that, well, again, with 10 days, I'm telling you right now, you can see this defense get some things cleaned up. And when Philadelphia comes in here, I want to see the Dan Quinn defense that we've been used to seeing all year, Matt.
Philly and Dallas, 10 days away. They'll take a little bit of a break here, and then they'll get it on with the Eagles. Eagles have to play Sunday against the 49ers, then turn around. Cowboys will be more rested, kind of a mini bye, we like to call it, stretch in the coaching business. Okay, buddy, appreciate it, and great to be with you tonight. Man, it's great to see you and Deion hanging out before the game. Deion Sanders seemed like he was kind of excited to see you.
Yeah, I don't know about all that, but O'Stretch had to give him a little, had to give him a little Texas love, and it was good to see him. And Mosley, it was not good to see you, but to hell with it. Have a good night.
All right, all right. You were down there. You were down there with Ralphie and the whole gang. Okay, there he goes. Stretch plays with Glenn Stretch Smith on the Doomsday Podcast.
That was Stretch Plays, Glenn Stretch Smith. And I want to say real quick, HudsonFinancialGroup.com. It is licensed property, casualty, and financial consultants, founded in 1988. And Randy Hudson is a UNT football alum, played Letterman there, started on the offensive line. Played for Corky Nelson back in the 80s. Loved Corky. He used to be at Baylor. The group focuses on asset protection along with finding ways to reduce taxes. I mean, I'm all for that. And I've never found a way to do that. And, man, just entrepreneurs, business owners, they do an incredible job of protecting them in any kind of liability situation. They take care of it. And I mean, just to have a place that would do your life insurance, your home and auto, one-stop shop, handle your money. It's an unbelievable place. It is HudsonFinancialGroup.com. That is Randy Hudson. And great to have them be a part of things. Now, Ed, I did get to visit with Jerry and Shaq Leonard, who you reported on this week, was in town, had lunch with Jerry. They did let him get out of here without getting signed. Then he was headed to Philadelphia. And Jerry told us tonight that he thinks that something will probably come down after the, he felt good about the meeting and all of that, but he thinks something will happen after the Philadelphia game. After Philadelphia plays this weekend, after Sunday, we'll know something. And that sets up a kind of another interesting competition between these two teams.
Yeah. So I think my understanding is that Shaq Leonard, you know, when he came here, it was with the understanding that he was going to go visit other teams, including the Eagles, after he visited with the Cowboys. So I don't know that signing him that day was really a legitimate possibility. I think it diminishes their chances that he went to Philadelphia, that he has a strong relationship with the head coach there, who was in Indianapolis as the offensive coordinator for 3 years while Shaq Leonard was there. I think Nick Sirianni said he's spoken to him multiple times last week on the phone. Then he went and visited there the day after he was here. You know, I do think that if he waits now until after this weekend's games, it seems almost impossible that he would play for either team in that December 10th game to me. I thought if the Cowboys were going to sign him, they would want to begin, you know, acclimating him to Dan Quinn's defense during this 10-day bye period where they have before they play Philadelphia, and then maybe he would play in that game. But if he's not going to sign with either team until Monday at the earliest, I don't really think it's possible for him to play a significant role in that December 10th game the next time the Cowboys take the field. I do know, and somewhat to my surprise, the Cowboys defensive coaches have told him that they view him as a nickel linebacker. you know, he was mad that the Colts were taking him off the field on third down and only letting him play on rundowns. You know, he's been a guy who's a real ball hawk, and he's got long arms, so he very much fits the profile of a Dan Quinn-type player physically and with his mentality about going for the ball all the time and getting it quite often. But it was interesting to me that they view him as somebody who would play on third down. I assume they take Marquise Bell off the field, who, you know, they're kind of getting by with. He's played well. I mean, he's a converted, you know, safety playing linebacker, which is less than ideal when you play some of these big physical teams that can run the ball. You want a real linebacker body out there, and you're probably going to need that at some point, you know, in these closing sequence of games and ultimately in the playoffs.
All right. Ed Werder's been out here much of the day doing a lot of reports out here from AT&T Stadium. Most of everything he did was prepare for the Doomsday podcast. I think that was really where the focus was tonight. Ed, we appreciate that so much. I wanted to close tonight. This was Micah Parsons, and I was standing over there when this interview was happening. Micah always gets a big crowd. And this was on Dak Prescott firing up the defense on the sideline after the Cowboys took that lead late in the game. And Micah said, I guess Dak went over there and screamed some stuff.
As leaders do in football games.
Yeah, but it kind of was like almost kind of to the point of turn it up. I don't want to use the language he used, but turn that MF-er up or whatever, and kind of like, he just kind of got everybody fired up. And Micah, I like this. He said, I'm like, dang, that S made me blush a little bit. That's my quarterback right there. That's always exciting. That energy he brings, that fire, he's at a different pace. This is the type of quarterback that's going to win us the Super Bowl. So interesting quote there from Micah, who said that, Mike is not like a prude, you know, he's obviously willing to cuss a little bit, but he said that I thought that was kind of funny. He said that Dak's words made him blush a little bit.
Yeah, Dak will embarrass you. Now, you know, I noticed that, you know, when I go out to the Star during the week and so forth and cover the team for TV, it's usually on the day that Dak speaks to the media, usually Thursday. And really has become apparent to me in the last month or so that Dak has begun to routinely use in our presence, even on camera, various profanities. He does it now regularly, almost like deliberately. He drops them in.
Yeah.
I guess it's the way football players talk. And
maybe.
And probably, you know, so do you and I, despite your Baptist upbringing.
I rarely. You don't hear me say much. But I would say I did this. This all started, this was not always a thing, but like Brandon Marshall apparently used to use and really use some aggressive language. And I just remember Martellus Bennett, former Cowboys tight end, explaining to me during one training camp that he said he had been studying Brandon Marshall because he wanted to act like him and to use more foul language. And I remember trying to explain to Martellus, I said, I don't know, does that really seem like a great goal? Like, that seems weird. But yes, he wanted to emulate. But yeah, I don't know what Dak's. It is more, and it's kind of interesting.
He did it after the game again tonight. I can't remember the exact word. Uh-huh. It's not usually one of the, you know, George Carlin seven, you know, dirty words you can't say on TV. And we're down to about none of those anymore, by the way. But yeah, it's just an interesting observation to see how that has transpired and become a regular part of his responses.
Well, and I don't know when this happened, but like even in NBA games and stuff, like players are more willing to do it like on a live interview. Like in there, I don't know who's doing it live, and maybe they can bleep it out. But anyway, that is kind of an interesting little side note. All right, Ed, safe travels. We'll be back together on December 10th. The Eagles will come. I mean, and that's a good thing for the Cowboys that the Eagles still have to play and then turn around and play them. And the Cowboys can just sit, rest a little bit, and then get ready for the Eagles. And then that's going to be a great matchup as we get closer to Christmas. And then again, after that,
I mean, they got tough games. I mean, at they got Buffalo, Miami and Miami, Buffalo, and yeah,
home against Detroit, and then finishing at Washington. So, yep, this is the gauntlet. But I mean, how about the poor Seahawks? They had to play the 49ers at, you know, home last week and lost. Then they had to come here and play the Cowboys and lost. Next, they go home and play the 40, go back and play the 49ers in San Francisco. Then they play the Eagles. How would you like to be in their situation? It's 6-6 trying to make the playoffs with that schedule right now.
Yeah, that is tough. But if they use those same uniforms,
they got a shot.
I think they'll be okay. Want to compliment the Jones family as some beautiful decorations, the holiday decor out here. And I did, Ed, talk to Jerry after the game about Bobby Petrino, like going back to Arkansas. I got some thoughts on that. And as you might guess, Jerry told me, explained to me that he was a big second chance guy. So he was, I don't know, he got almost a little bit emotional, but he was very happy to see Bobby Petrino back at Arkansas.
Aren't we all?
I don't know. It's very strange to see it. It still seems like sort of an elaborate joke, but I actually think this is happening. Ed, thank you, buddy.
Good to see you.
Appreciate it. Great to see you. Great to share this time with you. Happy holidays to everybody. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and we will be back with you on the 10th. This is the Doomsday Podcast. Thank you to Stephen Simcox doing yeoman's work. He had production and was calling games all over the state, but great to have him with us. And everybody have a great one, and appreciate all our sponsors. We will talk to you soon. Good night from AT&T Stadium.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of spring deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save big today on new arrivals from Kate Spade New York, Nike, Sam Edelman, Free People, and Madewell, starting at only $30. Great brands and great prices on dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and more. So rack your look and get first dibs on spring styles you want now, from just $30 at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?